I think probably the appeal of comics is, A, you're reading a story, and if it's a story you like, the type of story you like, you're halfway home. But B, you can also look at the pictures while you're reading the story. Now, a lot of people say, well, that's no good. It doesn't give your imagination a reason to grow and develop. I think that's nonsense for this reason. Shakespeare wrote plays. Should you never see one on the stage? Because then you're seeing what he wrote and your imagination isn't visualizing it. Maybe we shouldn't have stage plays. Maybe we should just read his scripts. You go to see a movie. Maybe you shouldn't go to the movie. Maybe you should just buy the screenplay. I mean, obviously, on the face of it, that's nonsense. Well, it's the same with a comic strip. A comic strip, in its own way, is like theater. You have the story, you have the illustrations. Steven Spielberg said to me once, incidentally, you may have realized by now, I'm the world's biggest name dropper. But he said to me once, you know, Stan, you and I do essentially the same thing, except my pictures move.
Back to the future is my favorite thing. Always talk about it and write songs to sing. Even though there was never a part four, Marty McFly is coming back for more. I don't make money, get no fame. Love for these characters is what I blame. Podcast about comics and cartoons and more, 'cause there's still things to explore in Marchy McFly 4. It's Marchy McFly 4. Can you feel it?
Happy Monday, everybody, and welcome back to Marchy McFly. It's March 11th, which means it's day 11 of year 4 of Marchy McFly. Folks, I forgot that we turned the clocks back yesterday, but ooh, it feels nice to get a little extra sunshine, doesn't it? Oh, you are the sunshine of my life. I'm in a good mood. I'm happy. Mainly because I am not talking about the cartoon today. I'm taking another break, going back to comic book world to talk about issue 2 from the Untold Tales and Alternate Timelines, the Back to the Future comic from IDW. I talked all about where I got the comic last time. I talked about Newbery Comics, the store that this was an exclusive trade paperback for. So I don't think I'm going to waste any more of your time. I think we should get right into it and talk some Back to the Future comics. So, as you know, these comics have two stories in them. So I will be, I'm going to do something where I'm going to talk about the first story first. Then I'm thinking I'm going to do the second story second. I don't know if that's what you thought I was going to do or if I've just thrown you for a little creative loop there. But this first story is called The Doc Who Never Was. It says story by Bob Gale and John Barber, script by John Barber, art by Marcelo Ferreira, and colors by Diego Rodriguez. So this story looks like it is in the 1800s, because the first thing we see are, well, we see men on horseback, and it looks like we see the old 1800s Hill Valley. And if I'm not mistaken, that looks like Strickland right there. We see this guy saying, "All right, now, is Doc causing trouble here?" I don't know why he doesn't sound like Strickland. I don't think I can do a Strickland accent or impression. Someone else says, "Looks like, I'll say, it looks like the circus is back in town." And another guy says, "What the hell kind of fun is that?" Now, I know that's not the guy who says, "Run for fun. What the hell kind of," I think that's a line exactly from that. "What the hell kind of fun is that?" And then a third guy says, you better get out there, Marshall. So they head out. He says, "You better get out there, Marshall, before Doc Brown does whatever Doc Brown is fixing to do." And they get out there, and it looks like there's some railroad track. Are those his boys? No, I think they have. He has workers working on it. Says, "Dr. Brown, what's this all about?" So he goes out to see Doc working on some railroad track. And Doc says, "Marshall Strickland, you're looking very healthy. Have you arrived to lend a hand? I sincerely doubt that. Well, as you can see, some friends and I are laying down some track for a little experiment." So he must do this all the time, the fact that even Strickland's like, "Another experiment?" "Precisely." Strickland says, "That the kind of experiment that needs 50 yards of track and no train? Don't make a whole lot of sense, Doc." And I don't know, Doc just kind of walks off with his boys. Now we see Jules and Vern, and they look like they're the age of when Doc and Clara went and introduced them to Marty. So I'm wondering if this railroad track that they're laying down is related to that. Interesting. We'll see. I have to be honest, I don't remember if I've ever read this story before. So, Strickland says, "Doesn't make a whole lot of sense." And Doc says, "The future doesn't always make sense. Which reminds me, boys, of the time I changed the future, but I don't even remember it. Let me tell you the story." So I guess everything's okay with Strickland, because he just kind of walks off with Jules and Vern. And the story itself is not in 1885, or I'm going to say maybe 1893, maybe 1895, maybe 1895. Maybe it's been 10 years. Wow, think about it. So when Doc, okay, wait a minute. I'm sorry, this is going to take a second. The Doc that met Marty the Doc that was with Marty in 85 is the one that went back with him in 2015. Okay, never mind. I was like worried, like he'd be another 10 years older by the time Jules and Vern and he met Marty. But remember, he had, a facelift, change of blood. He added a good 30, 40 years to his life. So he's doing just fine. So he tells the boys, "Let me tell you a story. It was a night like any other until everything changed." And then we see the date, October 24th, 1962. At 18:04, which is 6:04 p.m., it looks like the sun is setting, and we're outside of the Brown home estate. And someone walking up with files, it looks like. Someone's walking to the house. There's also two shadows near the house. I'm not really sure what's going on. But inside the house, there are a lot of TVs, and it looks like Doc and his dog, I want to say Copernicus, 1962. We still could have Copernicus. He says, "We're in the midst of an event that would change, that would become to known as the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's a long story, boys. Suffice to say, a lot of us thought the world would end that week." So he's watching all these different news coverages, and it says, like, missile deployment, cold, could mean war, blockade. "We beg all governments not to remain deaf to this cry of humanity." And he's still telling the story. He says, "I've been working on the flux capacitor. I had been since Marty McFly went back to the future and the past. Anyway, it had been 7 years and I was running out of patience and frankly, money." So all of a sudden, Copernicus, good, starts barking. He's like, "Is someone here?" And then all of a sudden we do see two people. It says, "Some interesting reference you have there." Doc turns around, there's two people in his house. "I'm surprised you haven't taken up needlepoint in your declining years. General Groves, He says, retired Emmett, the Manhattan Project took a lot out of both of us. So General Groves was in the last issue. Oh my goodness. Remember when he met Oppenheimer when he was working on the bomb? So now General Groves is there as an older man. Doc's a little older too. Well, he's older than he was in Back to the Future. He says, the Manhattan Project took a lot of both out of both of us. And Doc says, well, I see you've forgotten how to knock. We don't knock anymore. Cuba took care of that. The name's Lomax, Colonel Lomax. Wait a minute, what? Oh, this is another guy. This is another guy with General Groves, and he's this big dude, shaved head, wearing like a military hat and suit. Colonel Lomax, U.S. Army, operating under the auspices of the Department of Defense. And they notice he's watching TV. I see you've been keeping up with the, why on earth would a fella have more than one TV? And Doc says, I got the idea from an old friend or a future friend. It's complicated. Wait, that's not important. Why are you in my domicile? You know, I noticed Doc Brown here says domicile instead of house. But what I really, in the cartoon, it's like Doc goes above and beyond saying things that aren't necessary. He's like, you are the feline's nighttime wardrobe instead of the cat's pajamas, which, you know, in itself is still kind of a weird thing to say. So Grove says, we're looking for a way to stop that thing from happening. He's pointing at all the missiles and everything. And Doc says, you're a little late. And meanwhile, Copernicus jumps on the other guy, the general. Easy, Copernicus. These are friends, I think. And what's the other guy's name? Lomax. He says, late, you say? We have a different viewpoint. Thing is, Doc, Groves goes, I never forgot your flight of fancies back in Los Alamos. Always dreaming, but if anybody could, Doctor, to cut to the chase, the United States government is prepared to pay you handsomely if you can build a time machine. What? So this is that guy Lomax saying a time machine. And Brown's like, Doc's like, now don't get me wrong, boys. I knew I would accomplish my goal. This wasn't mere self-confidence. Marty was proof of my future success. I don't know why I'm Southern all of a sudden. And may I have mentioned I've sunk my personal fortune into making the flux capacitor. So an offer like this was all I could hope for, wasn't it? Because he can get more money, I guess. I mean, remember, it took him, well, we don't know when he really started building the time machine, do we? We know it was finished in 1985. He didn't tell Marty about it until 1985, but he could have been taking it, building it for years. He says, come along, gentlemen. You'll find this experimental prototype impressive. And already, he brings him in the back. He goes, I call it the temporal field capacitor. You might refer to it as a time machine of sorts. The temporal field capacitor. I mean, this is a machine that takes up the entire room. And Groves is like, ha ha, I knew I could count on you, Emmett. Lomax is like, of sorts. Doc says, it'll all be clear in a moment, at least to General Groves. I can't vouch for your intellect, Mr. Lomax. That's Colonel Lomax. So Doc starts explaining what it is. He goes, now you see here, there are two identical trays with two identical stopwatches. Please feel free to examine them. Just get on with it, Brown. Also, on this tray are two identical fast-burning candles. So he lights the candles. He goes, okay, now please start the stopwatches now. Thank you. Okay, the stopwatches and the candles are as synchronized as possible, given the circumstances. One set goes inside, the other remains as our control group. So he puts the one candle with a stopwatch into a, almost looks like a rolling desk. Closes it and says, now, the TFC can't allow travel throughout all time, only within the frame of its own existence. But that should provide a suitable proof of concept. In precisely 90 seconds, when we shall catch up with the experimental candle and stopwatch. And Groves is like, I can't wait. And the other guy says, why is it so hot in here? He goes, well, because the heat, I haven't figured out how to bypass it yet. Now, remember, he does figure it out because the car is damn cold. He goes, now, let's check inside. And he opens it up. Where the hell are they? Mr. Lomax, the correct question is, when in the hell are they? Spectacular, you've invented ways to disentangle candles. Hang on, he's eccentric. But we like that in our scientists. So he says, what kind of power is it running on? A quarter of a gigawatt. And they spell it with a J because that's the incorrect way to pronounce it. But when you spell it like that, a little short of what I need or what I suspect I'll need. All of a sudden now, it's very cold. And he says, well, I hope you'll find, Grove says, that's refreshing. He goes, I hope you'll find this refreshing. Ta-da! See for yourself. The experimental stopwatch is 90 seconds behind the control stopwatch. That's easily fake, Doctor. And then Brown says, you come to me, Lomax? Why would I have a fake time machine in my living room? You came to me. And Lomax says, even if I believed you and I reserve judgment, what use is traveling to the future? The mandate is the machine lets us change the past. And Grove says, he's got a point, Emmett. This is a prototype. I've tried to send objects into the past, but even a few minutes causes a buildup of flux energy. Well, this is a pretty good story. So this is him kind of talking about his first time machine and perhaps his first attempt at getting to where we are today. So any further back and I fear arrival at the target date would overheat the capacitor and start an electrical fire. Start a fire? Interesting. He says, but this is only an initial prototype. The first tracks to be laid, with the right resources, I'd be able to solve the flux problem. See, he needs to capacitate that flux. He goes, well, I'd be able to solve it in no time. It is interesting, I admit. Doc, you're never going to have to worry about funding again. Lomax, imagine the possibilities. So they leave, and Doc's in bed now, and he's like, the possibilities indeed. Unlimited money, but at what cost? The question hung over me that night. Surely the chance to prevent a nuclear war. I'll explain later what that is, Vern. And to continue research. Surely that was all I could ask for. All of a sudden, Copernicus is barking again. He goes, my God, what is that? There's some loud noise going. Something, and he goes, sometimes when the universe, when you ask, the universe answers. And not always the way you expect. So he runs outside and, great Scott. Oh, my God, on the next page, Marty's there in the time machine, in the DeLorean, dressed up in the nuclear outfit, dressed up, you know, like Darth Vader. Oh, my God, he's there. But this is 1962. Okay, so why is he there? What's going on? Marty says, Doc. Marty. Doc, the bleak, 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 bleak. All of a sudden, he starts speaking Russian. What the hell? Doc says, Russian? Copernicus and I didn't hesitate to enter. Oh, he said, get in the car. He couldn't understand what Marty was saying. Marty was speaking Russian. This is incredible. What is going on here? So he said he didn't hesitate. Him and the dog got in the car. Marty was in any language, our friend. So he said, but what we saw must have been a nightmare. Great Scott. Now they travel to May 8th, 1982. So this is 20 years later, but it's still 3 years before Back to the Future. It was Hill Valley, but a Hill Valley no sane man would dream of. A future of absolute chaos. This is worse than when Biff took over. Doc says, if this is what happens, to prevent the situation in Cuba from occurring? And Doc says, well, when you ask, sometimes the universe answers. This was no normal future. This was a future of time travel run amok. Oh, my God. Now it shows like Roman soldiers fighting army men from, looks like, the Vietnam era, maybe, or World War I or II. I can't tell exactly. or actually they're holding Tommy guns, and yeah, this might be World War II. And they're outside the Peabody Mall, or Peabody Mall. It'd be Peabody in Massachusetts. That's my Massachusetts accent. We have a town called Peabody, but it's spelled Peabody. Old Man Peabody. So there's still Two Pines, but he doesn't call it Twin Pine Mall. He calls it Peabody Mall. Doc understood at once. He says, first, the United States would possess time travel. So the Soviet Union would have to have no choice but to follow suit. An arms race would ensue, and the results spoke for themselves. Outside the shopping mall where Marty and I first would test the time machine, I grasped the ultimate implications. Warfare fought in a war where time could be altered so targets never existed. A means of defense, a second front of an attack. Ultimately, it didn't matter who did what. After the Manhattan Project, after helping usher in one arms race, my conscience couldn't take being part of another. He says, Marty, I think it's time we get out of here. Marty, Marty, come on. He goes and looks in the DeLorean, and Marty, there's nothing there but a vest and jeans, empty. He's been erased from existence. Doc says, great. Then we turn the page. Scott. And then he wakes up. I'm back. We're back. It's all back. It's October 25th, 1962. Was it a dream? A vision? Did it somehow happen? My God, it doesn't matter. This technology can't be in the hands of any government. But now that Groves knows it's here, he'll stop at nothing to get at it. Unless it was a desperate gamble. I thought back to the beginning of August, a night where Copernicus and I would fall asleep at the workbench of my quite fireproof laboratory. I'd invented the temporal field capacitor once that summer, and I could do it again later. The government money wouldn't come, but at least I'd insure the house. Oh, but at least I'd insured the house out of the wazoo. This, oh my God, okay. So at the beginning of the story, it's October 24th, 1962, and we see Doc Brown's full house. Now it shows October 24th, 1962, and the house is completely burnt down. So wait a minute. Oh, my goodness gracious. October 25th, he realizes what he needs to do. He figures it out, sends something back to burn down the house before they even show up. Oh, my God. They said, this is the right place, but where's Doc Brown's house? And the third guy says, afraid you're a couple months late, mister. Hi, I'm Goldie Wilson. I'm running to be your District 3 representative. Oh, hot damn. He says, hope I can count on your vote. And if I can't, oh, we're from out of town. Do you know what happened to that mansion or its owner? Oh, sorry, Doc Brown's been reclusive since he burned it down. On the down low, everybody knows it was for the insurance money. Emmett Brown, an insurance thief. That does not sound like someone we can count on, Groves. Let's get out of here. We're barking up the wrong tree. So Doc is looking out the window with Copernicus, and he is smiling happily. But wait a minute. He says, so why is he smiling if he doesn't remember? So we're back in 1895, maybe. He says, so you don't remember that at all? He goes, no. Don't you see? I left myself a note. Oh, he goes, no, I left myself a note. You said, I thought you said time travel didn't. And then, oh my goodness, they're on the train. He says, you can't expect the boys to grasp every intricacy of the space-time continuum. Not yet. Mom, they run up, and he goes, of course not. I barely understood at their age. I barely understood at their age, he says. Emmett, and they're hugging Clara. He says, I'm joking, Clara, but it's important to expose them at an early age. After all, it's never too early to start leaving tracks for the future. The train's there. They're on the tracks. We don't see them leave, but that was an excellent story. So just to give a little recap before we get to the next part, because I'm not sure my reading comprehension or my out loud, my reading, I don't know if it was that good. Me not sure if me talking is even good. So Doc was approached years later from the government to make a time machine that could be used for the government to help solve the missile, the Cuban Missile Crisis. But he has a dream, or does he? I think it was a dream, where he realizes if that gets in the hands of the government, that all hell could break loose. So he realizes, I can't do this. So what does he do? He does something. He sends a note to himself months in the past to burn down the house, and because these men are going to come for you someday. And he gets the note in the past, burns it down in the past. The guy, when they show up, there's no time machine. There's nothing for them to even see. So they head off. Doc saves the day, and then he can get back to work working on his actual time machine. That was a really cool episode. And now, because Bob Gale is the co-writer of this, is the story writer, I'm going to say this is canon, and this is how Doc Brown's house burned down. He got the insurance money, and he did technically do it on purpose, but it was for the fate of all humankind. All right, all right, all right. Well, I have to say, I quite enjoyed that last story. I don't think I gave the cover artist name. Cover art by Dan Showing. That's the same. It says colors by Luis Antonio Delgado. It's actually the art for that story, or for this issue, I guess, is the same art that from the first issue. It's the whatever's left. Like, it's this giant mural that it looks like part one, issue one had one part of the mural, issue two has this one. Issue three has the last part of the mural, which will be the third part of our, when we get to the third issue, our third comic book story. That'll be interesting to cover, because I'm not sure what the covers will be after that. But we have a cover here for this story, even though it's part of the issue two. This next story we're going to be doing here is called Science Project. The story is by Bob Gale, script by Eric Burnham, and the art by Chris Madden. The cover art is also by Chris Madden. This one is a little, I don't want to say it's I would say more cartoony, which is weird to say in comic books, but it's almost like anime style. I can't quite explain it. It's a specific style. It's a little sillier, lighthearted, I don't know exactly. But anyway, this the cover shows a flying DeLorean, so with Mr. Fusion, so we are at least in Back to the Future 2 time, but it also shows Doc, Einstein, Marty, and Jules and Vern. Now, timing-wise, did they rebuild the time machine? Did they rebuild another DeLorean? I'm interested to see where we go from here, because I don't remember ever reading this story. So this said, okay, well, never mind that Jules and Vern are on the cover. They're not at least at the beginning of this story, because this takes place before the events of Back to the Future. It starts in the workshop of Emmett Brown in September 1984. It looks like there's a bunch of boxes. Some say Old Estate. Some say Einstein. Let's look around this room. I see a drawing for the flux capacitor. I see a nuclear, something's glowing. Could that possibly be plutonium? I do see a radioactive suit in the back, and there is a box that says not radioactive that Marty seems to be putting stuff in. It says, okay, there's got to be something I can use in here somewhere. Maybe not these things. What the heck are these anyway? They're meant to make using eye drops easier, you know? Oh, there's glasses with two funnels over each eye so that you can give each other, you can give drops. He goes, for jittery people, I wasn't expecting you here today. I've been kind of busy all week. And Marty's wearing the glasses now. He's like, not today, but okay, here's the thing. Go ahead, I'm listening. I kind of have this science project due tomorrow. I just got busy, you know, there's been band practice, and well, look, I was just thinking you might have something laying around here that I could use. I'm not going to do your work for you, Marty. Oh, geez, Doc, no, I wasn't asking you to, but you're free to borrow anything you find here. I doubt there's anything useful or that you'll find useful, But you're more than welcome to look. Myra's like, hey, all right. I really appreciate this, Doc. He opens a cabinet and freaks out. He goes, ah! And inside, what the heck is this? There's a giant stone sculpture of, I want to say, Neptune, maybe? It's exactly what Doc says. Neptune picked him up for a giant fish tank I never got around to building. Unless you meant his necktie, because yes, Neptune is wearing a necktie that also seems to be an umbrella. He says, no, I figured that out. This probably wouldn't impress Mr. Zawatsky, which is the name of the teacher. It's just in small writing. That's why I had to pause. So it's a necktie that turns into an umbrella. I'm not going to say that's not amazing. And then he picks something else up. It looks almost like a dustpan on the end of a stick, but there's some kind of motor and a battery. He says, I'm afraid to ask. Oh, Doc says, that's an electric hoe. Now that almost feels like that'd be like a nickname for a superhero prostitute in the late 70s. The electric hoe. He says, perfect for weedings. Need a lot of power though. You have to wear the battery. Let's just put this on the floor. What are you doing over there with that wire, Doc? He says, I'm disentangling it. Very relaxing. Would you like to try? So he likes to disentangle wires to be relaxed. I kind of get that. I like doing tedious things. I find tedious things could be relaxing. He says, Marty says, not unless you figure out it'll help me out with my science project. Oh, something poked me. And he found a alarm clock with needles sticking out of it. He says, let me guess, this is to keep you from hitting snooze, right? And now he has a box of tissues on his head, and the box says Mr. Sneeze. Okay, I guess that's a Mr. Fusion callback. He says, okay, Doc, maybe you could just give me tips or something. Doc says, Marty, sorry, but the essence of science is discovery. The alarm goes off. Einstein freaks out, jumps on Doc. Doc drops a wire wrapped up in a metal bar wrapped up in wire that he was disentangling. He drops it on the battery. It hits the battery and goes, this is... And Marty says, well, how do you like that? It's a magnet. And Doc says, of course. You know electricity and magnetism used to be thought of as two separate things until Albert Einstein's theory on relativity. Yeah, that's great, Doc. I'll see you Thursday, Marty. He packed up everything, so now he figured out his science project will be a magnet. Didn't we do that? Didn't we make... No. Earlier in the season of Marty McFly, when we saw Bill Nye, he was using wire coiled up and a lemon, I think. That's what he was using to make a battery, right? Not a magnet. So Doc is leaving. I mean, Marty's leaving with a box of stuff for his science project. And Doc says, I'll see you next Thursday, Marty. And don't forget to bring a case of oil. And he looks at Einstein. He's like, don't give me that look. I did not help him. And then the phone starts ringing. He goes, oh, I've been expecting this. He runs into the other room, answers the phone, and says, hello? Yes, I left a message. Yes, I'm very interested. No, I'm very interested. No, that shouldn't be a problem at all. When can I get a look at it? And we see over his shoulder, there are a bunch of want ads for used cars. And he's looking at a used DeLorean. It says, needs some suspension work. Shocks, brakes, brake pads, steering, transmission, muffler. But it does have new tires. $4,800 or best offer. Contact Robert. So whoever Robert is, he has no idea that he is supplying the time machine that will change the course of the Brown family, the McFly family, and Hill Valley forever. I thought that was a cool little touch. So I enjoyed the first issue of this comic book, but I have to say that I thoroughly enjoyed the second issue even more, which gets me excited for going back to the third issue. But that's not going to be for a few days. Tomorrow we will be going back to the animated series. Probably going to try to do the episode pretty early because I am going to a college basketball game tomorrow night. My brother is a graduate of Merrimack College, and they are in a, what is it, the NEC tournament championship. And if they win that, I think they go to the NCAA tournament. I appreciate college basketball. I don't follow it really. I wish I was into it more. You know, around March, I will check out games and have games on in the background, and I'll always fill a bracket out. That has nothing to do with Marty McFly, but it is March, so it, in a way, I guess we could call this Marchy Madness. Oh, my God. Marchy McFly Madness. I'm not sure how that would work. A bracket. A Marchy McFly bracket. Now I just thought of that. I don't know what the hell it would be. Maybe I could fill out the sweet 16 of Back to the Future episodes. Ooh, a bracket for the cartoon. Ooh, that might be something worth doing just for fun when I finally finish the final episode of the animated series to come out with the best animated episode, which isn't a very high bar. I feel like the worst episode and the best episode will be very close. In like if there was a curve. But now I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. This, folks, you just saw production back behind the scenes show prep happen live during a recording. But yeah, I'm done now. I'm going to go watch some wrestling and just kind of relax, maybe read some Jack Reacher, and get back to talking Back to the Future cartoons with you again tomorrow. But before that, just a reminder, because nobody seems to be doing it, but you know what? You can follow me on all the socials. I'm not saying nobody's doing it, but I'd like to see someone new follow me on some sort of a social, on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Mastodon.social, and Blue Sky at Geek Mentality. That is the name of this show. So doesn't it make sense that that's my handle on all those social media accounts? And of course, at Fans Not Experts on YouTube, and fansnotexperts.com is where you can find this and every episode of Marty McFly, every episode of Geek Mentality, every episode of every podcast I do. And some of my own, some with my friends, and I'm looking forward to in the second half of Marty McFly getting some old regulars back on the show, some Geek Mentality staples to talk some animated series with them as well. But that's the second half of the month. Heck, we're not even halfway there. We're living on a prayer, but we're through two comic books and I want to say 9 episodes of television, if I'm doing the math correctly. So we're almost done with the first season. We are getting there. I think we're going to finish the first season this week. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Nah. Well, yeah, maybe by Saturday. Who knows? I don't know. Math, you know, not always my strong suit. But you know what is? Singing. And you know what I like to sing? Well, you know what it is. It's coming up right now, because thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. And here is my theme song.
This is my podcast. I made it. Geek Mentality's what I named it. And I think you should listen and subscribe. 'Cause I'm kinda funny and awesome. I think that I'm worth your time. And I'm kinda handsome. My mom says, please listen and please subscribe. At least listen to this episode.
Fans Not Experts.